Support for this public radio podcast comes from the Society for Human Resource Management, HR, leading people, leading organizations, online at shrm.org.
Daimler sells Chrysler.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Mark Austin Thomas. After months of speculation and rumor, Daimler Chrysler has announced it will sell a majority of its stake in Chrysler to Cerberus Capital Management. John Reed is a car industry correspondent for the Financial Times. I asked him why Daimler chose Cerberus, an American private equity firm.
That's what we don't exactly know, to be honest, right now. My assumption is that it was the highest bid, although they were also taking other things into consideration, including what Cerberus was saying about the future of the company.
This sale does have the support of the unions?
It does have the support of the unions. Ron Gettelfinger has said that it's, quote-unquote, in the best interests of our UAW members, as well as the Chrysler Group and Daimler.
So the responsibility for pension and health care, that's now Chrysler's going to be taking care of that, correct?
Absolutely. The pensions and healthcare costs are going to be taken over by the Chrysler companies, which will, as you know, be 80% owned now by Cerberus and just under 20% by Daimler Chrysler.
Daimler bought the company in 98 for $36 billion. They're selling it for $7.4 billion. Not a good deal, huh?
Not a terrific deal, but as you know, that reflects the fortunes of the U.S. auto industry, and Chrysler has been hit, I think, especially hard by competition from other Asian producers, and the value has absolutely shrunk. I mean, I think, you know, Ford or General Motors, if they were on the market, which of course they aren't, you might see similarly dramatic reversal of fortunes.
The board still has to approve this. I assume the chances of that are pretty good.
I think the chances are extremely good because Daimler Chrysler has been under pressure from shareholders to do something about Chrysler, whether it was turning it around or to sell it. And indeed, now that a sale is on the horizon with a good buyer, I think there's no question it's going to go through.
John Reed is a car industry correspondent for the Financial Times. Shareholders in Europe are excited about the news. The company's stock shot up more than 7% today. Other European markets aren't looking so good right now, but Asian markets traded strongly today. In Tokyo, the Nikkei rose 124 points. Friday was a good day on Wall Street. The Dow will open today at 13,326. The Nasdaq stands at 2562, and the S&P will begin the day at 1505. Time is running out on immigration reform. Over the weekend, senators and staffers worked to try and hammer out a compromise bill. As Marketplace's Steve Hinn reports, a major sticking point is how this country should decide who is allowed in and who isn't.
Conservatives on Capitol Hill say for too long, this country has prioritized family ties over education and job skills when deciding which immigrants to let in. Robert Rector from the Heritage Foundation says the result is too many high school dropouts crossing the border.
We never deliberately decided as a nation that, hey, what we really want to do here is maximize the entry of very poorly educated workers.
Rector supports a system that favors educated workers and immigrants who speak English. But Frank Sherry with the National Immigration Forum says giving some immigrants points for a PhD won't serve the U.S.
If such a point system is proposed, I suspect you will hear a lot of speeches in which elected leaders say, I will not support an immigration policy that would have kept my grandparents out.
Immigration reform itself may soon be out. If a compromise isn't reached this week, congressional leaders say the issue's dead until after the next election. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Who needs to try those pants on before buying them? Apparently a lot fewer people than you might expect. The number of people buying clothing online grew 25% last year. That word from an online retail industry report. The report predicts double-digit growth for several years. And if those numbers don't mean much to you, hear this. Last year, consumers in the U.S. spent more money buying clothing online than buying computer equipment on the net.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. By the Medtronic Foundation, celebrating women and women's health. Information and resources on women's health issues available at womenshealth.gov. And by The Economist magazine, which tells not only what's happening around the world each week, but why. The Economist. At newsstands, in bookstores, and at economist.com.
Beginning today, that first-class stamp will cost a little more. $0.41 to be precise. If you've got large envelopes and packages, size and shape will count along with weight. Another change affects magazines. It used to be that most postage rates apply pretty evenly to all publications. But starting July 15th, big magazine publishers will get a big discount, but not smaller publications. Not surprisingly, a coalition of small magazines, including the National Review and The Nation, are crying foul. Katrina Vanden Heuvel is the editor and publisher of The Nation. She says this move could silence important voices.
The radical restructuring that small publications face could end up silencing the diverse voices our founding fathers tried to foster when they created the national postal system. Sure, like everyone else, we'd like to avoid a massive increase in costs. And it's not that we're afraid of intellectual competition. We welcome it. But postal policy for the past 215 years has played a pivotal role in creating an extraordinarily free press. And we shouldn't let this magnificent tradition change. In this latest postal rate hike, the U.S. Postal Service itself had proposed a 12% increase that would have affected most magazines more or less equally. Surprisingly, the Postal Regulatory Commission rejected that proposal and adopted a complicated alternative devised by the giant publisher, Time Warner. That proposal would give huge discounts to big magazines, but smaller magazines would have to swallow hikes of between 15 and 30%. For some small publications, such huge and unexpected increases may prove fatal. New periodicals will find it very tough to enter the market. That means magazine publishing will get much less competitive. Time Warner argues that this is simply sane pricing by the postal authorities to reward efficiency. But wait a minute. The Postal Service is a monopoly. If magazines like ours that require the post office to distribute our wares dislike the onerous new rates, we have nowhere else to turn.
Katrina Vanden Heuvel is editor and publisher of The Nation. If you want more information on The Nation's argument, you can find a link on our website. It's marketplace.org. And in Los Angeles, I'm Mark Austin Thomas. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.